Chapter 2. Create a False Sense of Security. Approach Indirectly. If you are too direct early on, you risk stirring up a resistance that will never be lowered. At first, there must be nothing of the seducer in your manner. The seduction should begin at an angle, indirectly, so that the target only gradually becomes aware of you. Haunt the periphery of your target's life, approach through a third party, or seem to cultivate a relatively neutral relationship, moving gradually from friend to lover. Arrange an occasional chance encounter, as if you and your target were destined to become acquainted. Nothing is more seductive than a sense of destiny. Lull the target into feeling secure, then strike. Friend to lover. Anne-Marie Louis d'Orléans, the Duchess de Montpensier, known in 17th century France as La Grande Mademoiselle, had never known love in her life. Her mother had died when she was young, her father remarried and ignored her. She came from one of Europe's most illustrious families. Her grandfather had been King Henry IV. The future King Louis XIV was her cousin. When she was young, matches had been proposed between her and the widowed King of Spain, the son of the Holy Roman Emperor, and even Cousin Louis himself, among many others. But all of these matches were designed for political purposes, or because of her family's enormous wealth. No one bothered to woo her. She rarely even met her suitors. To make matters worse, the Grande Mademoiselle was an idealist, who believed in the old-fashioned values of chivalry: courage, honesty, virtue. She loathed the schemers whose motives in courting her were dubious at best. Whom could she trust? One by one, she found a reason to spurn them. Spinsterhood seemed to be her fate. In April of 1669, the Grande Mademoiselle, then 42, met one of the strangest men in court, the Marquis Antonin Peguilhan, later known as the Duc de Lauzun. A favorite of Louis XIV's, the 36-year-old Marquis was a brave soldier with an acid wit. He was also an incurable Don Juan. Although he was short and certainly not handsome, his impudent manners and his military exploits made him irresistible to women. The Grande Mademoiselle had noticed him some years before, admiring his elegance and boldness, but it was only this time, in 1669, that she had a real conversation with him, if a short one, and although she knew of his lady-killer reputation, she found him charming. A few days later, they ran into each other again. This time, the conversation was longer, and Lauzun proved more intelligent than she had imagined. They talked of the playwright Corneille, her favorite, of heroism, and of other elevated topics. Now their encounters became more frequent. They had become friends. Anne-Marie noted in her diary that her conversations with Lauzun, when they occurred, were the highlight of her day. When he was not at court, she felt his absence. Surely her encounters with him came frequently enough that they couldn't be accidental on his part, but he always seemed surprised to see her. At the same time, she recorded feeling uneasy. Strange emotions were stealing up on her. She didn't know why. Time passed, and the Grande Mademoiselle was to leave Paris for a week or two. Now Lauzun approached her without warning and made an emotional plea to be considered her confidant, the great friend who would execute any commission she needed done while she was away. He was poetic and chivalrous, but what did he really mean? In her diary, Anne-Marie finally confronted the emotions that had been stirring in her since their first conversation. Quote, "I told myself, these are not vague musings. There must be an object to all of these feelings, and I could not imagine who it was. Finally, after troubling myself with this for several days, I realized that it was the Marquis de Lauzun whom I loved. It was he who had somehow slipped into my heart and captured it." Unquote. Made aware of the source of her feelings, the Grande Mademoiselle became more direct. If Lauzun was to be her confidant, she could talk to him of marriage, of the matches that were still being offered to her. The topic might give him a chance to express his feelings. Perhaps he might show jealousy. Unfortunately, Lausanne did not seem to take the hint. Instead, he asked her why she was thinking of marriage at all. She seemed so happy. Besides, who could possibly be worthy of her? This went on for weeks. She could pry nothing personal out of him. In a way, she understood. There were the differences in rank, she was far above him, and age, she was 6 years older. Then, a few months later, the wife of the king's brother died, and King Louis suggested to the Grande Mademoiselle that she replace his late sister-in-law, that is, that she marry his brother. And Marie was disgusted. Clearly, the brother was trying to get his hands on her fortune. She asked Lausanne his opinion. As the king's loyal servants, he replied, they must obey the royal wish. His answer did not please her, and to make things worse, he stopped visiting her, as if it were no longer proper for them to be friends. This was the last straw. The Grande Mademoiselle told the king she would not marry his brother, and that was that. Now Anne-Marie met with Lausanne and told him she would write on a piece of paper the name of the man she had wanted to marry all along. He was to put the paper under his pillow and read it the next morning. When he did, he found the words, "C'est vous." It is you. Seeing the Grande Mademoiselle the following evening, Lausanne said she must have been joking. She would make him the laughingstock of the court. She insisted that she was serious. He seemed shocked, surprised, but not as surprised as the rest of the court was a few weeks later when an engagement was announced between this relatively low-ranking Don Juan and the second-highest-ranking lady in France, a woman known for both her virtue and her skill at defending it.
Interpretation. The Duc de Lausanne was one of the greatest seducers in history, and his slow and steady seduction of the Grande Mademoiselle was his masterpiece. His method was simple: indirection. Sensing her interest in him in that first conversation, he decided to beguile her with friendship. He would become her most devoted friend. At first, this was charming. A man was taking the time to talk to her of poetry, history, the deeds of war, her favorite subjects. She slowly began to confide in him. Then, almost without her realizing it, her feelings shifted. The consummate ladies' man was only interested in friendship? He was not attracted to her as a woman? Such thoughts made her aware that she had fallen in love with him. This, in part, was what eventually made her turn down the match with the king's brother. A decision cleverly and indirectly provoked by Lausanne himself, when he stopped visiting her. And how could he be after money or position or sex when he had never made any kind of move? No, the brilliance of Lausanne's seduction was that the Grande Mademoiselle believed it was she who was making all the moves. Once you have chosen the right victim, you must get his or her attention and stir desire. To move from friendship to love can win success without calling attention to itself as a maneuver. First, your friendly conversations with your targets will bring you valuable information about their characters, their tastes, their weaknesses, the childhood yearnings that govern their adult behavior. Lausanne, for example, could adapt cleverly to Anne-Marie's tastes once he had studied her close up. Second, by spending time with your targets, you can make them comfortable with you. Believing you're interested only in their thoughts, in their company, they will lower their resistance, dissipating the usual tension between the sexes. Now they are vulnerable, for your friendship with them has opened the golden gate to their body, their mind. At this point, any offhand comment, any slight physical contact, will spark a different thought, which will catch them off guard. Perhaps there could be something else between you. Once that feeling has stirred, they will wonder why you haven't made a move, and will take the initiative themselves, enjoying the illusion that they are in control. There is nothing more effective in seduction than making the seduced think that they are the ones doing the seducing. Key to seduction. What you're after as a seducer is the ability to move people in the direction you want them to go. But the game is perilous. The moment they suspect they're acting under your influence, they will become resentful. We are creatures who cannot stand feeling that we're obeying someone else's will. Should your targets catch on, sooner or later, they will turn against you. But what if you can make them do what you want them to do without their realizing it? What if they think they are in control? That is the power of indirection, and no seducer can work his or her magic without it. The first move to master is simple. Once you have chosen the right person, you must make the target come to you. If, in the opening stages, you can make your targets think that they are the ones making the first approach, you have won the game. There will be no resentment, no perverse counter-reaction, no paranoia. To make them come to you requires giving them space. This can be accomplished in several ways. You can haunt the periphery of their existence, letting them notice you in different places, but never approaching them. You will get their attention this way, and if they want to bridge the gap, they will have to come to you. You can befriend them, as Lauzun did the Grande Mademoiselle, moving steadily closer while always maintaining the distance appropriate for friends of the opposite sex. You can also play cat and mouse with them, first seeming interested, then stepping back, actively luring them to follow you into your web. Whatever you do, and whatever kind of seduction you're practicing, you must at all cost avoid the natural tendency to crowd your targets. Do not make the mistake of thinking they will lose interest unless you apply pressure, or that they will enjoy a flood of attention. Too much attention early on will actually just suggest insecurity and raise doubts as to your motives. Worst of all, it gives your targets no room for imagination. Take a step back. Let the thoughts you are provoking come to them as if they were their own. This is doubly important if you're dealing with someone who has a deep effect on you. We can never really understand the opposite sex. They are always mysterious to us, and it is this mystery that provides the tension so delightful in seduction. But it is also a source of unease. Freud famously wondered what women really wanted. Even to this most insightful of psychological thinkers, the opposite sex was a foreign land. For both men and women, there are deep-rooted feelings of fear and anxiety in relation to the opposite sex. In the initial stages of a seduction, then, you must find ways to calm any sense of mistrust that the other person may experience. A sense of danger and fear can heighten the seduction later on, but if you stir such emotions in the first stages, you will more likely scare the target away. Establish a neutral distance, seem harmless, and you give yourself room to move. Casanova cultivated a slight femininity in his character, an interest in clothes, theater, domestic manners, that young girls found comforting. The Renaissance courtesan Tullia d'Aragona, developing friendships with the great thinkers and poets of her time, talked of literature and philosophy, anything but the boudoir, and anything but the money that was also her goal. Johannes, the narrator of Soren Kierkegaard's The Seducer's Diary, follows his target, Cordelia, from a distance. When their paths cross, he is polite and apparently shy. As Cordelia gets to know him, he doesn't frighten her. In fact, he is so innocuous, she begins to wish he were less so. Duke Ellington, the great jazz artist and a consummate seducer, would initially dazzle the ladies with his good looks, stylish clothing, and charisma. But once he was alone with a woman, he would take a slight step back, becoming excessively polite, making only small talk. Banal conversation can be a brilliant tactic. It hypnotizes the target. The dullness of your front gives the subtlest suggestive word, the slightest look, an amplified power. Never mention love, and you make its absence speak volumes. Your victims will wonder why you never discuss your emotions. And as they have such thoughts, they will go further, imagining what else is going on in your mind. They will be the ones to bring up the topic of love or affection. Deliberate dullness has many applications. In psychotherapy, the doctor makes monosyllabic responses to draw patients in, making them relax and open up. In international negotiations, Henry Kissinger would lull diplomats with boring details, then strike with bold demands. Early in a seduction, less colorful words are often more effective than vivid ones. The target tunes them out, looks at your face, begins to imagine, fantasize, fall under your spell. Getting to your targets through other people is extremely effective. Infiltrate their circle, and you are no longer a stranger. Before the 17th century seducer Count de Gramont made a move, he would befriend his target's chambermaid, her valet, a friend, even a lover. In this way, he could gather information, finding a way to approach her in an unthreatening manner. He could also plant ideas, saying things the third party was likely to repeat, things that would intrigue the lady, particularly when they came from someone she knew. Ninon de L'Enclos, the 17th century courtesan and strategist of seduction, believed that disguising one's intentions was not only a necessity, it added to the pleasure of the game. A man should never declare his feelings, she felt, particularly early on. It is irritating and provokes mistrust. A woman is much better persuaded that she is loved by what she guesses than by what she is told, Ninon once remarked. Often, a person's haste in declaring his or her feelings comes from a false desire to please, thinking this will flatter the other. But the desire to please can annoy and offend. Children, cats, and coquettes draw us to them by apparently not trying, even by seeming uninterested. Learn to disguise your feelings and let people figure out what is happening for themselves. In all arenas of life, you should never give the impression that you are angling for something. That will raise a resistance that you will never lower. Learn to approach people from the side. Mute your colors. Blend in. Seem unthreatening. And you will have more room to maneuver later on. The same holds true in politics, where overt ambition often frightens people. Vladimir Ilyich Lenin, at first glance, looked like an everyday Russian. He dressed like a worker, spoke with a peasant accent, had no air of greatness. This made the public feel comfortable and identify with him. Yet beneath this apparently bland appearance, of course, was a deeply clever man who was always maneuvering. By the time people realized this, it was too late. Reversal. In warfare, you need space to align your troops, room to maneuver. The more space you have, the more intricate your strategy can be. But sometimes it is better to overwhelm the enemy, giving them no time to think or react. Although Casanova adapted his strategies to the woman in question, he would often try to make an immediate impression, stirring her desire at the first encounter. Perhaps he would perform some gallantry, rescuing a woman in danger. Perhaps he would dress so that his target would notice him in a crowd. In either case, once he had the woman's attention, he would move with lightning speed. A siren, like Cleopatra, tries to have an immediate physical effect on men, giving her victims no time or space to retreat. She uses the element of surprise. The first period of your contact with someone can involve a level of desire that will never be repeated. Boldness will carry the day. But these are short seductions. The sirens and the Casanovas only get pleasure from the number of their victims, moving quickly from conquest to conquest, and this can be tiring. Casanova burned himself out. Sirens, insatiable, are never satisfied. The indirect, carefully constructed seduction may reduce your number of conquests, but more than compensate
by their quality.